from deep inside your radio.
If you, ladies and gentlemen, if you don't think that famous deaths occur in threes, I have a week for you to consider. The one we've just lived through. Man, that's if I've never seen a cliche come true like this in my born days. So, Saddam Hussein is gone, supposedly. Of course, there's a little hanky with the panky, as there always must be. The original report was that two other people, his half-brother and the judge in the trial that was held of the people who were killed by Saddam, were both supposed to be executed with him at the same time, you know, kind of Barabbas style. Except that, and in the initial report, we were told that, in fact, they had been. And then a few minutes later, we were told that Saddam was the only person executed. And I've done my best, not that good, but my best, to find out any more about that. And it doesn't appear that there's any news about those guys. So, dot, dot, dot. To the other gentleman who left the planet this week, you know, ladies and gentlemen, when you have a long enough memory, you can be excused sometimes for wondering, did I dream that? So the two words that I was listening for this week, in vain, as the pundits waxed lyrical over the healing powers of Gerald Ford, as if his chosen career was not politics but reflexology. Well, maybe that's not that much difference. The two words I was waiting to hear, the two words that I remembered from the time, from the reporting of the time, because, you know, the time was fraught. The two words were describing Gerald Ford's ascension to the vice presidency and later, therefore, to the presidency. The two words were impeachment insurance. I never heard those words, and I thought, did I dream that? Political reporter Jules Whitcover wrote in his 1977 book, Marathon, Nixon did not, quote, want someone whose political attractiveness and ability were so outstanding so as to make his own impeachment palatable in Congress. Loyal, commonplace Gerry Ford clearly filled the bill, unquote. Tom DeFrank, a journalist who covered the White House, Nixon viewed Ford as, quote, impeachment insurance, i.e., the 37th president did not think the Congress would see Ford as presidential material and thus would never press to impeach Nixon. According to one of his top aides, not named in this report, Nixon picked Ford because the Congress knew Ford so well they would never impeach Nixon if it meant Ford would become president, unquote. Ford was thus Nixon's impeachment insurance. So I didn't dream it. It just escaped the notice of the pundits, because they were too busy with the healing. And the third person to leave us, I met on two occasions. The second time I met James Brown, it was I'd gone with a friend who was a bigger celebrity than me, if you can imagine such a thing, to see the Siegfried and Roy show in Las Vegas, back when they were doing that, and I was doing that. And so my friend, the celebrity, got invited backstage and took me with him. And there we were backstage in the splendiferous Siegfried and Roy dressing room, built for them. And the other celebrity back there with us was James Brown. And for about the next 45 minutes, maybe the most surreal conversation I've ever witnessed. James Brown and his then wife. I can't say I participated in it. But I did witness it. It looked as if James, you know, those can always be kind of awkward situations, especially since Roy was walking through the dressing room with one of the cats. That's how big the dressing room was. I mean, this was, you know, the size of a small house. And Roy, as a matter of fact, actually leaned over to my friend and I, my friend and me at one point, and whispered as he was walking by, "After 25 years, Fischbach is still afraid of the cats." Fischbacher being Siegfried, who probably was right. Anyway, as I say, these can be awkward because these people, none of us had met before. And so, you know, who does, what do you say? But after you've said, "Great show, love your work, blah, blah, blah." James Brown took it upon himself almost to be like Mike Douglas, just throwing out a series of bizarre but conversation-starting questions. Like, the first one I remember with great clarity, "What do you think of science?" He asked Siegfried of Siegfried and Roy, "What do you think of science?" At which point Siegfried said, "What do I think of science? What do I think of science? What do I think of science?" He literally did every reading you could do of repeating the question. At which point James just said, "All right, send me the letter. We thought about it." It literally was the most surreal conversation I've ever been anywhere near. My first meeting with James Brown, my first encounter some years earlier, same friend. We were both just totally knocked out by a Funkadelic record that had just come out, which really basically saved my life during my first few months at Saturday Night Live. And then Funkadelic was going to be playing at the Apollo with the addition of Felipe Wynn, the former lead singer of the Spinners. This is all R&B lore. But it got us very excited, and we decided to go up to the Apollo. But we were two young white guys. And my friend said, "Well, you know, it may be tough to get a cab up there." And in fact, the first three cabs that we stopped say, "Apollo Theater." So I finally said, "Watch this." Stopped a cab. 8th Avenue, please. We got in, closed the door, the cab took off, and I said, "And 125th Street." But, you know, still a little apprehension. Never been to the Apollo, never been to Harlem. Grew up in an integrated neighborhood, but this was Harlem, ladies and gentlemen. We get out. The minute the cab drives away, we start thinking, now all we have to do at the end of the show is find out how we're going to get back. A little jittery. Walk up to the will call line, and standing right in front of me, wearing a full floor-length mink coat, was James Brown. And I turned to my friend and I said, "You know what? I think we're going to be okay in here." This is the Year in Rebuke edition of Hello, Welcome to the Show.
This is a man's world. not a woman or a girl. Got to have a woman. He needs a woman or a girl. He needs a woman. Man, make everything you can, but a woman makes a better man. Man needs a woman. Man, think about anything above, but money can't buy him love. Face the fact. Gotta face the fact. Man needs a woman. He needs a woman or a girl. Oh. Man needs a woman. He needs a woman.
2006 was the year that a pioneering rap hip-hop recording label named Death Row Records went bankrupt. Or was it vice versa?
It was kind of abrupt. Your lawyer called to interrupt. He says you're going bankrupt. It's such a damn shame. Your career, it's gonna disrupt. Your vital juice is gonna be cupped. Your nuptials won't be prenupped. Might even be denupped. Who was there to blame? All you did was make a fortune on thugging and drugging, on bugging the sisters while becoming A-listers and pimping champagne just to tantalize the burbs with kicking new verbs and reverbs. Gangster fantasies blasting by our curbs. Here's the 411. The deal has long been done. From the time you took Death Row as your fictitious business frame, you were bankrupt in everything but name. Bankrupt Records. It doesn't sound so raw or real, but a deal's a deal. What's a couple murders between friends? This is how the story ends. Don't just play the game. Take the name. We shoot to maim. Bankrupt Records. Way that you're alone. This is how the whole industry is going. Suing what they should be sowing. Trying to put downloads on the down low. Subsidizing your scary minstrel show. Covering your bling and your blow. But now here's the thing. Death Row, where is thy bling? So you were frightening the rubes, playing them for cubes, while you played with guns like life is an Eastwood Western, all cash and no carry. And you're just Dirty Harry. Bankrupt Records. It doesn't sound so raw or real, but a deal's a deal. What's a couple murders between friends? This is how the story ends. Don't just play the game. Take the name. We shoot to maim. Bankrupt Records.
And also on a cultural note, of course, 2006 was the year that Al Gore, fresh from his triumph, creating a new television network. Oh, you missed that? Became a movie star.
Mr. Vice President, I know I'm being terribly formal. Al, I'm Shelley Grutton.
Hey, Shelley, we've talked on the phone, haven't we?
Yeah, sure. I'm sure we have. Mm-hmm. Come, sit, be.
Thank you.
Chandra, mm-hmm. If anyone calls, I'm far, far away.
Yes, sir. Unless it's Les Moonves.
So, I guess the grosses didn't suck?
No, Al. They didn't suck. See, this right here, this is the funny Al Gore that I guess America's starting to love.
Oh, look, this is just the Al Gore underneath all that media spin. I've always had a pretty wicked sense of humor, self-deprecating and all, mm-hmm. but so we We going wide for the second week?
That's a good question. Not wide, wide. Not wide, wide, wide. Wide.
Meaning?
Three more theaters. Mm. But look, that film's launched. It's on its flight path. We'll continue to monitor its metrics. But what I wanted to talk about to you today is, where does Al Gore's movie career go next?
Shelley, I don't have a movie career. I have a media career. Have you seen current TV?
You know, I haven't been able to catch it. I thought we had everything at the house. I got the dish, I got cable, but can I offer you some water?
Oh, sure. Water can't hurt you. What do you got?
Well, for visitors, we've got Dasani, but for you, we got Fiji.
Yeah, I think Fiji's still okay.
There you go. Mm.
Oh. Now, I know we've had some carriage problems with current TV, but we just got picked up by Menominee Cable.
Nominee? I didn't even know you were running.
Me nominee, the Indian tribe.
Ah.
You'd be amazed, you know, since the casino opened, the number of tribe members with big plasma screens and premium cable.
Hmm.
So, next movie, huh?
Be great to announce something while the warming thing still has some heat.
Yeah, sure, I hear you. Mm. Well, gee, other causes? I mean, I don't have any other PowerPoint presentations that I've been going out with.
You know, in a way, I think that's a positive.
Mm.
In a big way. It gives us the opportunity to start clean, fresh, tabula rasa. You know, I mean, obviously, we're building on what we know about you. You're smart, you're funny, you care, all that good stuff.
Thank you. You know, I didn't watch it. One thing Tipper has taught me is never to watch myself on TV. But people have said to me that I was a lot funnier on Saturday Night Live than most non-pros.
You know, I've heard that too.
Hmm. You didn't say it?
Tell you the truth, TiVo was on the blink.
Hmm.
My wife started watching Anderson Cooper a couple of weeks ago, and ever since then, for some reason, the TiVo's been recording a lot of old musicals. Anyway, yeah, you're funny, but you're not dumb funny. You're not Farrelly Brothers funny. You're Geico insurance commercial funny.
Hmm. I guess.
Look, here's a treatment for something our development guru, Calder Caldicott, thought might be a very good arena for you.
Calder Caldicott? Huh. I think I've met him.
Yeah, I think you did too at the thing.
Hmm. The Inconvenient Astronaut.
It builds on the whole Inconvenient franchise, but it takes you to a much sexier platform, i.e. outer space.
Outer space is sexy?
It's sexy-ish.
Hmm. Think Vince Vaughn is a young hotshot at NASA, raring to make the first flight to Mars, but he's been aced out of the assignment by Al Glink.
Yeah, that's you. The name can be changed.
An aging but still handsome astronaut who's determined to make this his final flight.
Yeah, see, so far, before the stunts, it could be a comedy, but it could be a drama.
Yeah.
But for you, we're thinking comedy. Or drama.
When Al recruits a sexy CIA agent, thinks Sandra Bullock, to kidnap Vince, all hell breaks loose, literally. What does that mean?
It means about $80 million in special effects. You know, funny special effects, but always smart funny.
Sure, sure. Mm-hmm. Kind of makes me the bad guy, doesn't it?
Well, in a comedy, the bad guy is funny. I mean, the only Adam Sandler movies, The Tank, are the ones where he plays a nice guy.
Hmm.
But, yeah, outer space may seem a little bit out there as a concept.
A little out of this world, you might say.
Yeah. That was you being funny, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay, good. Caught it.
Yeah.
Look, here's a very different take. Very underplayed. We'd partner with Pixar or somebody.
Hmm. An Inconvenient Hound. There's that inconvenient again.
Al, it's your honey, I something the kids.
It is.
Yeah, I mean, I know I don't have to tell you. You don't walk away from your brand.
No, I guess not.
No.
Alvin is an animated dog with a face not even his mother could love, but an outsized imagination. He's the mutt that sees all his purebred friends in the neighborhood getting first-class treatment. Well, he's fed on table scraps, but in his dreams, he's the most pampered pooch in the world.
And it's his adventures, you know, as the Queen of England's dog, mm-hmm. or Bill Gates's dog, yeah. or Jay-Z's dog, or whatever. I mean, you know, you can see how wide open the concept is. Very smart, very funny, kind of episodic adventure-type pieces. And in between, we keep coming back to his real life and his real friends. And, of course, it's just the coolest animation you've ever seen. You know, about $80 million just for the animation.
Uh-huh. Now, I like him not being purebred.
Well, see, I told the development people, think like Al. I mean, I don't want to get all hubristic here, but...
Not sure that animation is the way I should go.
Uh-huh,
I mean,
uh-huh.
You know, should I be running for anything, which I'm not,
yeah.
but, you know, uh-huh. just if I were, I think my people would kind of want me to have my face in anything that might be playing in theaters around that time, you know.
Yeah.
Anybody could be doing my voice.
I suppose. It's like those internet chats with celebrities, mm-hmm. and then their interns are the ones actually chatting with you.
That's right. So...
Well, this was something that I said you might just love, but mm-hmm. Calder didn't want to show it to you.
An inconvenient day off.
Basically, cut to the chase, it's a remake of Ferris Bueller with you in the Ben Stein role.
Oh, well, my daughters loved Ferris Bueller.
Well, see, I knew there was going to be a connection there.
And I know it's kind of having fun with my sort of professorial way of talking when I'm talking.
Think a younger Topher Grace is the kid. Think mm-hmm. you. Mm-hmm. Think... $80 million just for the effects.
What effects? It's Ferris Bueller's day off.
Oh, in the remake, there are effects, trust me.
Mm.
When he borrows his father's Maserati.
Well, it was a Ferrari.
But we already have a deal in place with Maserati. Right. Anyway, at one point, he's distracted by a video he's watching in his pod, and he drives straight into the Museum of Priceless Objects.
He's watching an iPod while he's driving? That's kind of a bad example.
A, it's a comedy. And B, we already have that deal in place, too.
Well, you know, Shelley, you've given me a lot to think about.
And a Fiji water.
And a Fiji water. Thanks. Thanks for all of it. Really good to finally meet you.
Yeah, you too.
Anything I can do for the next weekend's openings? You...
Yeah, we're fine. We've got good you.
Okay. Let me do a little thinking about all of this.
Oh, of course. You're the thinking man's thinking man. Call me. Chandra, when Al calls me, put the call straight through.
Yes, sir.
Take care, Al. And,
yeah.
Oh, the very good news?
Yeah.
There's an ethanol station right on the lot.
Cool.
2006, speaking of seldom seen television, was the year that Dan Rather resurfaced with a series of documentaries on HDNet, the high-definition television network owned by Mark Cuban, who also owns the Dallas Mavericks. You haven't seen it yet either? You haven't seen it yet either? I'll say that again. No, I won't.
Good evening, sir. Do you have a reservation?
Hi, Cheryl. It's Dan Rather. Is my usual table available?
I'm sorry, sir. The name again, we've had some computer problems.
Rather, Dan Rather. Mm-hmm. Table 17 has kind of been my second home base for the 20-odd years that I anchored the scene.
Yes, sir, I see it now. You've been moved to our inactive file. I can't access your customer profile, and Table 17 is reserved for Tina Fey.
Tina Fey?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I thought this was a restaurant for serious people.
It is, sir. She has a show on a broadcast network in the fall. We do have a brasserie-style property for cable and satellite talent, if you'd like to.
Daniel, come sit with me.
You don't mind if I...
Oh, of course not, sir. Right this...
I think I can find my own way. Thank you. I mean, it's not Table 17, but it's not their brasserie property either. No, it's not. So, Brother Rather.
Yes, sir, Michael. What brings you to mid-Manhattan in the middle of vineyard season?
Oh, just some follow-ups on the Ahmadinejad broadcast.
Follow-ups?
You know, affiliate interviews just to reassure the restless natives that I'm not guilty of treason. Little things like that. You?
Oh, I was taping the interview for my retread tribute show.
The reporter re-remembers?
Yes, sir. My job, express gratitude, no regrets, 40 great years, looking forward, great memories, great challenges, great colleagues, you know the drill. Mm-hmm.
You want some bread? They haven't brought the menu yet.
You know, the bloggers would love it if I went on that broadcast and seemed wet hen mad or ex-wife bitter. Mm-hmm. We asked ourselves if we wanted to do that, and we decided that not only would that dog not hunt, he wouldn't even get up out of bed and shake off his fleas.
Well, of course, you've got your whole high-definition future ahead of you. You've got no reason to be bitter.
Michael, sir, please. The cameras don't work, the makeup doesn't stick, and I'm spending tomorrow looking for office space in the low 20s. I didn't even know they had offices in the low 20s. Thought that was little theater in big nightclub country. Thought wrong.
Well,
but congratulations on the get of the year, amigo. You know, I remember when I first interviewed Saddam Hussein.
Well, you know, it wasn't easy. His people call CBS News. Now, of course, they try to set it up for the evening news with Sister Couric. Mm-hmm. Well, that flies with our Islamic friends about as well as a slice of cement kugel. So then Fearless Leader turns it over to 60, and they say, we'd love to do the piece with our newest correspondent.
Enter Miss Katie one more time.
Well, by this point, the Iranians are ready to peddle their president to Brother King, as long as he doesn't take phone calls. When the Ayatollah in charge of media relations runs into me up at the vineyard.
Sorry, Horst, lost the thread there for a gnat's blink. What was an Ayatollah doing up at Martha's...
Apparently, he's one of the moderates. Hmm. Anyway, it comes together because of that chance meeting. I get one of the biggest scoops of my entire career while I'm on vacation.
Yes, sir, and in that same flutter of fruit fly's wing, I'm cattle pen close to 14th Street, scouting for a halfway decent place to park my hiney. Interesting turn of events.
Daniel, look, Sister Zirinsky re-interviewed me for your retribute. I'm utterly glowing about you. I call you an inspiration to two generations of young network television anchors from Texas.
Much obliged, amigo, but you're making it sound less like a tribute and more like an obit, making me feel more like Brother Jennings than Brother Rather. But looking at it broomstick straight and moonshot true, it really doesn't matter what you said on a broadcast that's going out the Friday before Labor Day. Only people watching it are going to be Jerry Lewis' tech crew and the bloggers.
Daniel, you had a significant role to play in the unmaking of Richard Nixon's presidency. You wouldn't want to imagine him seeing you right now, seeming bitter about your tribute special's time slot.
Brother Wallace, all due love and respect, sir, please, but Richard Nixon was a whole different kettle of chili. He couldn't forgive his enemies. I'm just working on forgiving my friends.
Yeah.
Okay, Mr. Wallace, is it going to be just you, or am I going to have to bring a second menu?
You know what, Michael? I'm going to let you fly the rest of this meal, Diana Ross, solo. I never really was the white tablecloth wine steward customer profile on the computer kind of hoss. Brasserie-style property sounds more up my creek bed. Probably get a plateful of hush puppies and some shiner buck.
Yeah. Yep.
Congratulations, Michael. And watch out. You're the next Cherokee in the blogger's sights.
So, just the one menu?
Yes, Lester. Daniel, tell Jerry Lewis's crew I'll be joining them.
Thank you, sir.
I'll either watch it live or I'll catch up with it on the website. You be well, Brother Rather.
You too, Brother Wallace.
This is LeShaul, the year in rebuke. And this was a year when we learned, thanks to repeated speeches by President Bush, especially in the first half of the year, that we are addicted to oil. That's the phrase he used over and over again, starting with the State of the Union address. And by golly, Look at the difference it made.
You know what problem's rising faster than an overdose of yeast? It's the way that we depend on the bad old Middle East. It's full of sheiks and Shiites, keep things on the boil. God, I hate to say it, we're addicted to oil. God, I hate to say it, we're addicted to oil. Believe me when I tell you, addiction is no fun. It always ends up leading to a foreigner and a gun. Why don't we bring our problems home to native soil? Never gonna do it while we're addicted to oil. No, never gonna do it while we're addicted to oil. Just get me right, don't get me wrong. There's a reason why I didn't see the truth for so long. 'Cause I'm an oil man, just an oil man. My pie hole was just a dry hole. Sometimes you kick the habit, sometimes it kicks back. So I'm not gonna promise we'll always stay on track. Why have the turkey cold when you can set it to broil? Can't say that I don't love it, we're addicted to oil. Yeah, can't say that I don't love it, we're addicted to oil. Fill her up, boys. Started, we were on that slippery slope. The problem with solutions is they take too much toil. It's like a kind of sickness, we're addicted to oil. It's like a kind of sickness, we're addicted to oil. Just get me right, don't get me wrong. There's a reason why I didn't see the truth for so long. 'Cause I'm an oil man, just an oil man. Yeah, my pie hole was like a dry hole. My problem's rising faster than an overdose of yeast. It's the way that we depend on that bad old Middle East. It's full of sheiks and Shiites who keep things on the boil. God, I hate to say it, we're addicted to oil. Lord, I hate to say it, we're addicted to oil. You know it hurts so much to say it, we're addicted to oil.
This was the year that after 2 years of denying their existence, the Bush administration decided to acknowledge the existence of certain so-called black prisons. They acknowledged them at the time when the prisoners who were being held there were moved to Guantanamo to stand eventual trial. But even the acknowledgement of the existence of those prisons, which were places where the CIA sent suspects suspected of something bad in Eastern Europe, basically, rankled a few people. The countries in question in Eastern Europe had denied the existence of those prisons. The European Union had denounced the possibility that they might exist. And there was even some rumbling underground.
Next, intimate tales of America's first underground vice president. The action-packed diary of the man who's less than a heartbeat away from history.
Dick Cheney. Confidential.
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 When you're making an omelet, you gotta break some eggs. Heck, sometimes you actually have to go ahead and
torture, or kill the eggs. People say that's hard-nosed. Well, when you're in an existential battle against those who would wish us ill, and against those who don't believe we're even in an existential battle, and sometimes even against a constituent in chief who's not sure what that means, the soft of nose need not apply. The end of summer means the artificial sunlight ends earlier at the secure undisclosed. Navy believes mimicking the natural rhythm of the seasons is good for our well-being. But you just hate to see that yellowish light give way to the less yellowish light earlier and earlier. Maybe that change was making my proboscis a little bit tougher than usual. Or maybe it was just having to fight an existential battle against a Secretary of State whose idea of toughness is wearing kinky boots. The constituent in chief was planning to unveil a new policy towards the detainment of evildoers. And I was rolling up my sleeves right up to the knuckles to make sure that the new policy was the old policy. A certain Miss Rice was in the way. Tuesday, 2:17 p.m.
As we've argued for months, the intelligence value of what we're getting from those detainees is far overshadowed by the black eye the United States is getting among Europeans, among people in the Middle East, among those whose primary concern is human rights.
Madam Secretary, please wake me when we're getting a black eye among people I should care about.
Mr. Vice President, America is supposed to stand for something.
It does. And the very first thing it stands for is the survival of America. Without that, all these little rights and privileges you care so much about are nothing more than wallpaper in the United Nations men's room.
You know...
Pardon me. And ladies' room. You know, I think I'd like to hear from the Attorney General.
You'd like to hear from him because he agrees with you.
That doesn't make him a bad person. Go ahead, Al.
Thanks. Folks, the fact that the Justice Department has generated memos defending alternative methods of interrogation is legal, memos that have subsequently been withdrawn, should tell you one thing. We have what it takes to do it again. If we need it to be legal, it can be legal.
See, that's the kind of can-do attitude I want in a foxhole with me, where I'd have a different set of priorities such that I might actually be in a foxhole.
I think I'll be in a foxhole before you will, Dick.
Only if they open a Prada in one.
Folks.
Yes, Carl.
We gotta have a decision here. The decider has to make a speech on Thursday, and if we don't make a decision, the decider can't announce it.
Mm-hmm.
Me, I'm, of course, just domestic policy advisor, but it looks like maybe, and you know how it pains me to say this, that maybe you have to lean in the Secretary of State's direction on this one. I mean, we can still be good and mean to the detainees in Gitmo, right?
Not if the people at Gitmo are bound by the new Army Field Manual.
Well, they are in the Army, so that might be a tough nut to avoid.
Well, still...
Folks, I hate to disturb our civilized little gathering here, but this broken bottle symbolizes what you're about to do to a fine, productive, and most important, really scary program.
I'm sorry. We're about to break its neck off?
Miss Rice, and by the way, my regards to your significant other as soon as you happen to find one. But those Europeans you care so much about, or should I say the new Europeans who've actually helped us with the Black Prison Program... They're going to feel a little betrayed if the constituent-in-chief comes out and says the program they've denied is happening on their soil is, in fact, happening on their soil. Well, I don't think that's the way we treat our friends.
Well, if you ask the Shiites who rebelled in Iraq back in 1992 when we suggested we'd help them, I think it is.
Appreciate the history lesson, but the next time we go to the new democracies of Eastern Europe and ask them to let us have a black prison on their soil in return for a little unaudited line of foreign aid funds, I'm guessing their price is going to be significantly higher.
Well, chance we've got to take. Our polling says Americans don't like torture anymore.
Well, of course, Carl, it's not torture under our definition, although we'd be happy to write the memos any old which way. I think I have to side with Secretary Rice just for the sake of not getting another lecture from the Supreme Court a year from now.
All right, then. I'm guessing we're voting.
Yes, Mr. Vice President, I guess we are. Nothing like bringing democracy to the White House.
From
Remind me not to be around when Condi Rice starts packing on the pounds. Sarcasm doesn't look so hot coming out of a portly woman's mouth. The day later, I'm wrapping up the blank prison account back in the secure undisclosed with the ambassador from the United Kingdom. Wednesday, 4:17 p.m.
Rather early for the sun to be going down, isn't it? Feels like Christmas in Dublin.
Navy guys say their computer crashed. Yeah. The clocks haven't been reset. Yes. So look, Ambassador, you know we value the relationship with Britain almost as much as we value our relationship with ourselves.
Well, it's a relationship, obviously, that our Prime Minister cares about enough to have virtually sacrificed his legacy for. I'm sure you know that.
Hey, none of us are in this for the glory. But I hear that our friend Mr. Blair may be in line for some prime corporate directorship soon after he departs, number 10. So I'm not crying for him, Argentina. But now look, there's some loose ends to wrap up here on the black prison matter.
Well, I appreciate there might be, but that's hardly a matter for Her Majesty's government to...
We flew some of those high-value detainees through your airports, my friend. So this is not really a propitious time for you to be Her Majesty-ing me.
Well, I believe we demonstrated absolutely world-class deniability on this flight.
So we're looking for you to let our Eastern European friends know that as of about noon tomorrow Eastern time, the Black Prison Project is being publicly acknowledged and disbanded. The detainees being transferred to Gitmo and prepared for military tribunals if and when Congress can find the cojones to legalize them.
And you're going through us because...
Strange that I have to explain myself to a junior member of the partnership. I don't remember reading that in the manual.
Seriously, Mr. Vice President, why should Britain have to shoulder the burden of enduring the anger and the outrage of allies who are about to be profoundly embarrassed in front of their domestic publics?
That's a good reason right there. I think our plate is about full up with anger and outrage at the moment. But little reality check for you, Mr. Ambassador. Your country fancies itself as the leader of Europe. These disappointed little principalities are in Europe. So lead them. Besides... I don't think you're getting out of here without acceding to my little proposition.
I assure you, you're not threatening me with physical violence.
Oh, no, sir, of course not. I'm just suggesting that's one bottle of Meursault you won't be sampling tonight. Too bad. Parker gave it a 97.
Yes. Well, Mr. Vice President, of course, this can't become public knowledge at a time when our government are facing intense criticism for being your government's poodle.
Of course not.
And by that I mean that this can't actually become public at any time before Mr. Blair leaves office.
Of course not. Just suggest to our European friends that silence right about now will buy them another nice line of unaudited funding in the next fiscal year.
Understood.
Fine. Wish I could offer you some wine, but...
No, that's all right, Mr. Vice President. I should just like to be escorted back up outside before virtual darkness falls.
I think that can be arranged. Omelets are funny things. Sometimes you break the eggs. Sometimes the eggs break you. End of partial diary for the start of September 2006. Sincerely yours, Dick Cheney. Confidential.
From McLean, Virginia, the human intelligence capital of the world, Court TV presents the first annual Spooky Awards.
Hi, I'm former Presidential Security Advisor Richard Clark, and I'm hosting this exciting event. That's right, an award show hosted by the other Dick Clark.
For the first time ever that we know about, the national intelligence community takes a night out from snooping around the world to pay tribute to itself and everyone who is no one is there.
Oh,
south has former CIA Director Robert Gates, and he's wearing a dark suit. Oh, God, another one. I think I'm going to throw up all over Melissa.
And the Spooky Award for the best foreign covert operation goes to the killing of the son-in-law of Osama bin Laden's right-hand man in Waziristan.
This is the award show that counts, because it's voted on by the people who know best.
I'd explain the rules, but not even the accounting firm of PricewaterhouseCoopers knows who's in the Academy.
I mean, what other award show can make your intelligence level go up?
The first annual Spooky Awards. Just try to find out when it's on.
Well, there were extraordinary methods revealed and discussed during 2006. The Congress was prevailed upon in the fall of an election year to approve the administration's use of certain techniques, but to restrict some or not, depending on how you read the law. And, of course, the one of the most controversial ones was the technique, the interrogation technique, don't you know, which had, I believe, at least one United States military official during the Vietnam War had been court-martialed for using it on the grounds that it was torture. But now the terms of the discussion had changed. And so there was a great deal of debate about whether, under the new law, waterboarding would still be allowed, even though the administration made great attempts to purport that, far from being torture, it was, well, it was extraordinary, but it was almost kind of fun.
Well, it may not be legal, but it sure as heck makes me safer. And it may not yield useful intel, at least that's what they say. But it's a pleasure so rare, seeing captives gulp air. Let's go waterboarding, USA. Let's go boarding.
It's not torture if I say it ain't.
Boarding.
Those conventions are so old and quaint.
Let's go. Say we never ever do, no way. Let's go waterboarding, USA. Well, it's nothing like surfing, 'cause you can't get off if you want to. And it's really hard work, but for us it feels much more like play. If the tables were turned, we'd all feel really burned. Let's go waterboarding, USA. Let's go.
And this was the year, perhaps, that John Kerry's hope of running one more time for president, hopes were dashed, basically when he tried to deliver a joke about President Bush not being very smart. We haven't heard that one before. And just didn't get the joke outright, kind of botched the joke, and then spent 2 or 3 days defending himself. And then finally, after a week, I think, a few days, apologized for botching the joke. So that was a good use of media time. But he's learning.
From CPR, Continental Public Radio, this is Up to Here. Up to Here, a daily once-over, not-so-lightly, of the story behind the tip of every iceberg. I'm Milton Getzler in Washington. When Senator John Kerry acknowledged this week that he had botched a joke written to deride the intelligence of President Bush, it was not the end of the story. That botched delivery, which allowed critics to interpret it as criticism of American troops at war, convinced Senator Kerry's advisers that if he were to proceed with his rumored return to presidential campaigning next year, a kind of makeover was required. Ira Zipkin reports.
Okay, good. You've got the opening out of the way. Keep going.
As a matter of fact, my wife Teresa is here tonight, and it's a good thing, or I might never afford, with the price of gasoline skyrocketing, to get my car out of valet parking later in the evening.
Ah, see, that sucked. Are you kidding with that? The price of whatever later in the evening after you kill with the word parking?
I just wanted to put the joke into context.
Can I tell you something? If I want context, I'll watch Law and Order.
It's 1:15 on Saturday morning, and we're in Dr. Laffenstein's comedy pit in suburban Providence, Rhode Island. Senator John Kerry is working out, as the comedians call it, doing a late night, or more accurately, early morning workshop, with two veteran comedians to guide him, Joan Rivers and Yakov Smirnoff.
Let's try one of the switcheroos, Mr. Senator. You can't go wrong with them. What a formula.
All right. I do want to tell you folks that things are so bad in Iraq at the current moment.
No. See, too many words. Wasting audience's valuable time.
It tells me, you're nervous. Well,
I am nervous. These people out here are extremely intoxicated.
John, there's three of them.
Just say, in Iraq, and then go for it.
In Iraq, war loses over you. What a country.
What's with this over?
Well, it never hurts to add a preposition.
It does hurt. It hurt bad.
I think that one of my very strong points is that I learn from my mistakes, and I incorporate what I learn into my future behavior. Yes, I botched a joke. I'm never going to do that again. And with the help of Joan and Yakov, I'm going to make my delivery even better than my pickup, if you get where I'm going with that.
I think I do.
John is a natural at so many things. Great skier, looks good in a nice suit, you know. So it shouldn't be so hard to teach him how to tell a joke. Of course, it shouldn't be so hard to find a new husband for Melissa, either.
Sonny Lipschitz, the owner of club, invited me down to help with workshop for Senator. This slow week in Branson, and Joan, God bless her, I guess it's slow time for her, too, so we're both glad to help.
Okay, how many people want to hear that joke once more with the right timing?
Yeah!
Okay, Senator, the drunks have it.
Okay, so pause before wife?
Pause after wife, before cockle picker.
Before cockle picker. Got it.
But does he? The verdict isn't yet in.
I think a couple more workshops, he could tell jokes, you know, not like professional. Hey, I couldn't do whatever it is he does like professional, but certainly as good as, you know, after dinner speaker at major Rotary type event.
You know what I like about this man, aside from hair he could die for? Literally. I like that he's trying so hard. You know, personally, I think with that attitude, he should try screwing up the jokes more. See, that's the whole kind of postmodern kind of funny. At least that's what Melissa tells me.
Senator Kerry's advisors have scheduled another joke-telling workshop for next early Saturday morning, when his helper is scheduled to be Larry the Cable Guy's brother, Jim the Delivery Guy. I'm Ira Zitkin at the Comedy Pit.
And the fellow says to the agent, "Well, I'm sorry, but even Caruso had to clear up his throat." I think I put an up in there that shouldn't be there.
And for today, you've had it up to here. We had help from the Help Public Radio Foundation and from the Nan and Philip Rendon Foundation in support of Philip's desire to hear his name said more often. I'm Milton Getzler. Join us next week when we get you up to date, up to speed, up to here.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I thought it was an easy call. What was the most remarkable quote of the year? It had been this.
This debate is occurring because of the Supreme Court's ruling that said that we must conduct ourselves under the Common Article 3 of the Geneva Convention. And that Common Article 3 says that, you know, there will be no outrages upon human dignity. It's very vague. What does that mean? Outrages upon human dignity.
I thought, you can't top that. No way. Until I saw President Ford's funeral and heard these words from the mouth of Dick Cheney.
Sometimes in our political affairs, kindness and candor are only more prized for their scarcity.
You win, babe. That, ladies and gentlemen, is the year in rebuke. The show returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.415 megahertz, channel 133 on XM satellite radio, available as a free download at www.audible.com/theshow. Around the world on the internet via your computer at two different locations whenever you want it, live and archived, harryshear.com and kcrw.com. And now it's fixed, available as a podcast for free at kcrw.com or iTunes. And it'd be just like having another ridiculous year to deal with if you would agree to join with me then, would you? All righty, thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack, a tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks. Le Show playlists available at harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. Happy New Year, everyone. Come on, drink up.